Welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you so much for joining. Please subscribe and like it if you like it. Comment anything you'd like. We want to know what you like, what you don't like. You know, if you suffer from addiction and you want to talk about it, if you need help, reach out to us. We are a 501(c) and we, you know, our goal is to raise money for people who need help and need scholarships and things like that. So hopefully we can get there one day. Today I have Josh. Thank you so much for coming, Josh. Josh, what we do here on Crosstalk is basically it's like experience, strength, and hope, right? Like take us through how you grew up, what happened. how you ended up here in my table, basically, but mostly, you know, what happened and then what does recovery look like for you? What did it look like when you first got sober? What does it look like now? How did it evolve? You know,
I guess the best way to start, right? Like, I'm a recovered alcoholic and my name is Josh.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I introduced myself that way because the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me like I will be recovered, or if I'm introduced to someone, their attention should be drawn to me as someone who has recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Like, and what does that look like, right? February 23rd, 2017 is my sobriety date.
Amazing.
The only person.
So we're very close. I'm December 25th, 2016.
Okay, so you're like right in front of me, right?
I mean, yeah. Right. So, I was still crazy for a couple months, so you know, I don't know.
Sweetheart, coming up on 8 years sober, and I'm like still batshit crazy up here. Right?
I'm sure not batshit, but
not as much as I used to be. But like, we look at that, and like, what does it look like? People are like, oh my god, 7.5 years sober. Like, oh my god, it's impressive. Like, you're impressed. The young lady is impressed. Like, people I meet, they're impressed by that. What's not impressed by that is my alcoholism.
Right.
And I know that I wake up every morning with like untreated alcoholism. And what does that look like? You know, we can start with, you know, like I grew up in a very poor household. My dad was, you know, from Mexico. My mom was just never around. That's probably the most polite way to put it. She's like, all right, you can do this or you can be there for your family. Mom, like, fuck them kids.
So she was, wait, was she working?
No, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. Like, my dad is, you know, very old school, old world, you know, call home. Yo, pop was good. He's like, oh, you know, mijo, God bless to me.
Right.
You know, like, and real, like, old school values. He was like, I'm going to work. I'm going to provide. You know, I want you to take care of the house, take care of our children, raise them, and I'll provide everything. Problem is, my mom likes smoking crack.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, like, and, like, my first solid memory is at 10 years old.
Yeah.
And everything before that is blank.
Wow.
Right. I was sitting with my grand sponsor one day. We're out to dinner. I'm freaking out about something stupid. And he's like, you know, what's your first memory? I'm like, the little toy car my dad brought me for my birthday. My 10th birthday, it was a little white Mustang, had blue racing stripes on it. The thing was fast.
Yeah.
Right. It'd get too far from like the radio controller and like it'd be gone.
I love that.
We'd be in the bushes looking for it. You know, I got five brothers and two sisters. We're all out there. And, but like, that's, so think about that, right? My brothers tell this story. They're like, you know, there was this time my dad went to work. You know, we're from Homestead originally. It's all farm land agriculture out there. So my dad gets up early. He goes to work in the fields. And at some point during the day, my mom gets this thought that just one would be nice. And she leaves for 3 months. And she leaves her three sons at the time in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. And the neighbors find us. And my dad comes home. My dad does everything he can. And like, that's the way that our life was for a long time.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's the kind of childhood that I had for a long time. At some point, my dad was like, all right, this isn't working. We're going to move to Michigan. Great idea.
Are you being facetious?
No. Okay. About the great idea part? Absolutely. Oh, right. Okay, but like, moving us to Michigan, like, that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know, zero education. He came over from a different country. You know, he learned to read, write, and speak English.
That's so cool.
Right? And all self-taught, like zero education. And he worked really hard to provide for these eight kids that were just bad kids. Yeah. I mean, I was a bad kid. I knew that growing up.
Were you the youngest?
No, I was the middle child.
Okay.
And we'll make it even sweeter for the pot, right? At some point, my dad got the bright idea. He was like, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to hit my knees. And I'm going to give my life to God. And that's what he did. And he became a preacher.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love that.
Middle child, preacher's kid. Like, where do we go from here?
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So we start to talk about alcoholism and what it really means to be an alcoholic. And it's more than just like, okay, I'm going to pick up a drink. I can't stop. I don't know how to get stopped. And when I do get stopped, I can't stay stopped.
Yeah, yeah.
So where do we go next? Well, what is it about myself that I have this feeling inside that I just can't shake.
Right. It's a spiritual disease.
Oh, we're going to get to that part. Yeah. Just wait, right? So like, I remember when we define alcohol today, like the big book tells me, right? It's like alcohol in any form at all. Dr. Silkworth talks about it, right?
Yeah.
Disease allergic types can never use alcohol in any form at all. And I know people that are like, oh, that's talking about like rum cake. And I'm like, did you ever think about the fact that like, he elaborates on that, right? He says that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol.
Yeah.
Now let's take it a step further, right? What is it today that I like the effect that produces that I don't have to deal with the way that I feel on the inside? I buy new trucks. Yep. I buy new motorcycles.
Yep.
I buy new houses. I get a new girlfriend. I break up with that girlfriend because I work 80 hours a week and she's like, you don't have time for me. And I'm like, you're right. You're a pain in my ass.
Yeah.
See you later. Ya.
Wow. Yeah, no, it's so funny. I was saying this yesterday to someone, like even in sobriety, like mm-hmm. I am reminded all the time that I am 100% like no doubt about it, an addict alcoholic, because I wasn't just alcohol. I was prescription medications. I was marijuana.
You went to a doctor for your medications. Oh, I just go to the trap house.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I ended up there. Yeah. I ended up there. That's the truth. In New York, they kind of like glossed over. They called it after hours.
After hours.
It's after hours there. But you walk in, it's a dark spot somewhere mm-hmm. in Brooklyn, right? Like address unknown till you're wasted and they text it to you, right? And then you get in there and everyone is you know, yeah. like, you know. So it's like a glorified trap house, basically. But, you know, it starts with... So it was everything for me, all of it, you know, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And, you know, today it looks like the buying new things, Amazon crap that I don't need. I used to go to the dollar store, like, and I don't do that anymore. I'll go for like candy and stuff, but like, I don't go there anymore because I know that it's just useless crap that I'm going to throw away. Right. But I've buy it on Amazon. It's just useless crap.
Next thing you know, you got a pile of Amazon yeah. boxes.
Or it's something food. For me, yeah. it's like food stuff. Like I have these hyperfixations. I'm going to eat the same popsicle stick for like three boxes of it. You know what I mean? Till I'm done.
So you were kind enough to pour me the double shot espresso, right?
Yeah.
I've got five cases of these at home in my refrigerator.
Oh my God.
Right? Okay. My addict.
So you're 100%. Oh, 100%. There's no doubt about it. Right?
And like, if I look at that, like, what was the first thing that you can honestly remember changing the way that you felt about yourself?
Yeah.
Right? Because when we're talking about, like, having this disease, this dis-ease of my mind, like, my mind has always been uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I've never been comfortable being like, you know, my name is Josh. You know, I've got a bunch of family members, my dad. So we grew up in nice neighborhood. Right. Mm-hmm. Like my dad, he managed to get us a house and it was a nice house on like 40 acres in the middle of nowhere in Michigan.
Wow.
Right. Like real good school system and like predominantly white. And like we were the oddball out. You know, I grew up very short, very dark, very Mexican. And I was fat as a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, what was it that was there inside my mind that was like, you're not good enough.
Right.
Right. And but it goes further than that because like we were poor. My dad's got no education. He's got eight kids. We're on government.
But he got here.
He got here like six different times. Like they missed him on the seventh one. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be sitting here.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, you know, but like.
That's a different conversation.
That's a different yeah. conversation for a different.
I'm sure we can yeah. talk all day long.
But like, you know, for me, the first thing that really changed the way that I felt about myself was stealing.
Yeah.
You know, my dad couldn't buy us brand new shoes and brand new clothes and brand new bicycles, but I could go steal it.
Right. And which is a process addiction, 100%.
Absolutely. But like that changed the way that I felt about myself. So when we talk about alcohol in any form at all, like my first alcohol of choice was stealing because I could go steal something. I could break into somebody's house and all of a sudden now I've got money. I've got the things.
And you have the thrill.
Right. And that, oh, that's adrenaline junkie to this day. I jumped out of a plane like six times in a row and the woman at the counter taking my money is like, sir, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine, sweetheart. I want to go again.
Yeah, you should just become a you know, a skydiving jumper person.
It's they call them instructors.
Yeah, I have a friend who mm-hmm. actually does it, but I couldn't think of
yeah, that. And like the crazy part is like after that time, like even the dude that I was strapped to, he was like, you know, this is a lot of money to pay to be strapped to some dude. I'm like, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, so at 11 years old, I'm robbing a dude's house.
Yeah.
And I find a bottle of tequila. underneath the kitchen cupboard. I don't know anybody that keeps valuables under their kitchen cupboard, but in my mind, like, there's got to be something under there.
Right.
I remember looking at the bottle and being like, I wonder what that worm is for, and never remember getting to that worm. And as opposed to, like, most people, they wake up the next day and they feel like, oh my God, no. Like, I came to the next day and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't have to feel the way that I felt anymore. Right? At 12 years old,
it kills the best.
It makes me mean, and I know that.
Oh, no.
I got a couple of DUIs off tequila. That's how I know it makes me mean.
Okay. Well, it's good that we both don't drink it anymore. How about that?
I'm telling you, right? And, like, for me, like, I found meth at 12.
Wow.
I left home at 13, and I ran the streets until I went to prison at 19.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
I don't know about incredible. Like, I'm just surprised I'm not dead.
Yeah, no, that's why it's, what I mean by it's incredible. Yeah,
absolutely. And we'll take it a step further, right?
Yeah.
You have a 13-year-old child that is full of anger and hatred, doesn't understand why, doesn't know why he feels this way or how to deal with it or process it or
heal from it. Has no support.
None. And it's not like I didn't have support. My dad was like, Mijo, just come home.
Yeah, of course.
Right? My mom, she finally got her shit together for a little while and she was like, you can come stay here. And I was like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, every time I'd get popped for something, stealing a car, breaking into a house, getting into a huge fight, they're like, hey, you got to go home. And I'd be there just long enough to be able to cut that ankle monitor off. And they always tell you the same thing. If you cut the ankle monitor off, leave it here because it's expensive. Clip.
No, they don't. Oh,
I promise you, I've been on ankle monitor probably like 14 times.
Okay.
They always tell you the same thing. Cut it off, leave it here. So, like, I run the streets, right?
That's what they think. Anyway, whatever.
But, like, I remember my senior year of high school, I had it was crazy because, like, I was in and out of people's houses. Like, I was couch surfing from, like, 13 to 17. I went to school almost every day. I was stealing cars at night. I was selling large quantities of illegal substances. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And, like, I still managed to go to school and get good grades. And then I played football and I wrestled.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. How are you going to school?
I would literally, so it's amazing, right? When you, and maybe it's just the people that I was surrounded by. But they were like, dude, like, okay, we're going to have you go do these things because you're underage and you can't really get in trouble.
So did you get your GED and then?
I have a high school diploma.
Oh, you do? Mm-hmm. So where were you staying? Like, you were...
So for a long time, like, I had people in my life that were more than willing to be like, yes, you can do whatever you want. You can sleep here. Oh, you want an alarm clock? Cool. Hey, if you have the foresight to, like, maybe do something other than what you're doing, because you're making me enough money, that I'll take care of you. But if you want to go to school, go to school. If
so this was like the drug deal, like I'm.
So that's like a completely different conversation. I'm okay. Not really comfortable okay. having.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but like the we avenue
cut
was
that little part out.
I mean, actually. You can leave that in there, but like, it's.
So you were getting by.
I was getting by.
And you were going to school and you were selling illegal substances. Yes. And then at 19, you went to jail.
So at 18, I had a scholarship to the University of Miami.
Oh my God.
I had a full paid ride to Universal Technical Institute out of Houston, Texas to work on cars. My mom still has a letter from BMW of North America offering to pay for my schooling. And when I got done, they would put me anywhere in the world I wanted to be.
So you were super talented.
Supposedly, I still am.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean to use past tense. But
No, you're not wrong.
You are. Okay, you are super talented and you essentially squandered it, I guess, till you didn't anymore. Like, you didn't know better.
And that's the thing, right?
Like, it's a disease, as we say.
Well, and it's still that dis-ease of the mind. I have all these things going for me, but that voice in the back of my head when I'm having that morning coffee or I'm taking a shower that tells me I'm doing such a great job is still going to tell me to go kill myself. Like, how do I deal with that?
Isn't that scary?
It's the unfortunate reality of what it is that I deal with.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I understand that. I think that's why we're both here, right? Because
absolutely.
You know, there's a line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that is italicized. And back then, mm-hmm. like italics were more expensive, right?
Pay attention to it.
But it's really that we can identify with one another, and that's why this whole thing works, right? And even though this isn't an 12 step recovery podcast, right, at all, but so many people that come here, that's how they have recovered. Mm-hmm. Whether it's in, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or some other recovery program, you know, that's really how they recovered. And although I do believe that there are other ways to recover, I know people who have, the most successful people I know have done a 12-step program.
And that's the thing, right? Like, I was out to dinner the other night with a couple of homeboys, right? We're sitting there talking and we're kicking back like different ways to go through the steps. And he was like, Josh, same, different.
Right.
And all I could do was laugh, because how right was he?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I've been to federal prison, right? Real gray area of the law. Not sure if you're aware or not. You're not allowed to sell methamphetamine and tote a pistol.
I know.
Yeah. They tend to think that's armed trafficking. I don't know why, but that's what they think.
I'm sorry. It's not funny, right? But it is so funny.
It's hilarious, right?
Guns and drugs don't mix. That's all I know. Everyone has always told me guns and drugs don't mix. Like, if you let someone in your car that has a lot of drugs, don't also let someone in your car that has a gun. That's what I learned, you know, when I was out there doing my, you know.
And the federal government sent me to prison for 10 years about it. I knew nothing about gain time or good time, whatever you want to call it, right? And I get up the road and they're like, hey, you know, your homeboys are over there, you know, because I walk in and I look kind of dark and, you know, I'm Mexican. That's my ethnic background. And they're like, you know, what are they, con quien cores? And I'm like, no, bro, like, you have me confused. My name is Joshua. I'm white. Right. Like, let me throw on like my best Poindexter voice. Right. And like, oh, okay, your homeboys are over there. So I go over there and, you know, the dudes with
you're too dark.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, nah, essay. Wrong side of the compound. I'm like, gentlemen, my name is Joshua. I am white. They're like, you know, you speak Spanish. I'm like, yo, si habla un poco de español. And they're like, cool, here's a shank. That was literally as long as my arm. And I got to be the interpreter for my first 6 years. I've seen the entire East Coast of the United States. But like, and let's look at that, right? Like, what kind of trauma and damage happens when you're young, you're 19, you don't follow
super talented.
Well? Right. Like, and prison wasn't all bad. It wasn't all gang raping and like really bad shower scenes. Right. Some of them were fun. Right. You can laugh. That's a joke.
Okay.
But like, I learned to crochet. I learned to tattoo. Like, my mom loves that hat and scarves. I was just out in Texas with my daughter for Christmas and she's got this blanket. Right. It's purple and it's white. It's got her name on it. I made it. And her fiance is like, oh, you know, I don't know why you keep this old thing, bop, bop, bop. And I'm just sitting over there, right? Her mom's there, right? Her mom's got
this. Does he not know that you made it?
Oh. Right? I look like this, very unapproachable. People were like, dude, like, you look like you're a tough guy.
I know how to crochet, too. We could do that together.
Oh, dude. It's like, oh, check out this stitch, right?
Yeah.
And my daughter, she looked at him deadpan, and she says, my dad made that. And you could say his whole face turned white. And he's El Salvadorian, right? Like, he's darker than you and me put together. And he was like, And I'm like, what about it? And he was like, oh, no, it's nice. Bro, I started laughing. Her mom's laughing. She's laughing, right?
That's amazing.
Like, it's like the different opportunities that we have. Like, if this is the hand that you're given, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, yeah, like, prison wasn't all great. Like, what did I get out of it? You know, I took some courses while I was there. Didn't understand, like, stabbing people would just, like, keep my points really high, which means I was in the penitentiary the whole time I was there. But, like, you know, so I travel a lot on a prison bus. I spent 2 years in solitary confinement for a year at a time. At some point, a guy was, like, being funny. He was like, here's the Bible. You need Jesus. And I was like, when I get out of here, I'm going to kill you. And I was dead serious about it. And I'll never forget, the guard was like, you're not getting out of that hole on this compound. You'll never see him again. And they transferred me.
Yeah.
So by the time I finally, you know, it's my release date, you know, they put me on a little van. They're like, all right, here's a $50 gift card. Here's some clothes that somebody mailed in for you. Here's the couple $1,000 that you made illegally in prison tattooing that people sent you for money, right?
Yeah.
They're like, here's a fucking bus ticket. Kicked me out at a bus stop. And they're like, all right, welcome back to society. Zero support. And then I get to a halfway house. It's a reentry center for prison. And they're like, we want 60% of your gross. You have to find a job.
60%.
That's what the federal government does. They give you zero support. They show you zero of anything. They're just like, go find a job and reintegrate into society.
There's no like reintegration support.
Why would they? It's a
money-making system. They want you back in there, of course. Okay,
right.
Fine.
And like, I'll never forget, like, it was the guys That's that were crazy. There with me, right? And it was the counselor and the case manager and the associate wardens. They were all like, we got a bed waiting for you when you get back. I gave my radio to one of the homeboys, and he was like, yo, he's, I hope you don't come back, but if you do, I'll give you your radio back. Right? Wow. And I'm taking this bus trip from the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, and I'm coming back down to Miami, right? And I'll never forget 3 a.m. sitting at the Atlanta bus stop, and I freaked out. I had a panic attack, right? And I know that they're going to drug test me as soon as I get to this spot, but I should have just enough time that if I have a few drinks, I can make this feeling go away, and I'll be sober enough that I'm not going to blow hot when I get there. And that's what I did. So like, Josh plus meth equals prison. What can I do that's not going to land me back in prison? I'll never forget making that deal with myself when I got out. I was like, I don't care what it takes. I'm never coming back.
Okay.
Right? And for me, God. And it wasn't like in a healthy way. Like, I'm going to do whatever I need to be a productive member of society. I was like, I'll kill myself before I go back. And that's literally where I was at. I have destroyed relationship after relationship after relationship. I was a horrible father. My family wanted nothing to do with me.
So you had your daughter.
I got her mom pregnant.
Before prison.
Right. And it wasn't like we were in a relationship. We were just like two horny kids, got together and got a surprise out of it.
Right.
Right. I'm pregnant. I was like, I'm going to prison.
Yeah.
I'll see you in 10 years. So I come home.
Did you have any contact while you were in
prison
with her?
So her mom has always been really cool. Like, her mom is a super religious. That's probably the easiest way for me to put it. But like, she has a relationship with God that like allows her to be like kind and understanding and forgiving. And like, that's something that I never understood. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I would get my shit together for a little bit, and she'd be like, all right, don't fuck up. Like, if you're going to be a part of our life, like, be a part of our life. You know what I mean? Like, and like, we're really good friends.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it didn't start
out that way. Well, cause forgiveness is really the key, as we now know, you know, but it really is the key to like being okay within, right? We can't carry this like hate and
so it's, for me personally, and I can only speak from my experience, it's not about forgiveness, it's about healing.
Yeah, it's all a part of it.
So her mom was always like really cool, so I'd be like in and out of their life, and then I'd be off smoking crack, and she'd be like, all right, don't come around. Right,
right.
And like, she moved to Texas while I was in prison, and my daughter, the last time I spoke to my daughter before I got sober, she was kind enough to tell me exactly what a piece of shit I was, and to let me know to never contact her again.
So you're out of prison, you're in Atlanta, you're having a panic attack, which is like, mm-hmm. The first sign clearly you need some like more help than drinking, right?
Well, I mean, define more help than drinking, right? Like, well, do I want to go and sit with a therapist and he's gonna be like, why can't you remember that you got molested when you were a kid? I'm like, because right. My butthole hurts, dude.
Right.
You know? No, it's like, so I'm sitting there like, I don't know anything else.
Yeah, well, that's why you don't remember probably before you're
more
10.
Than likely.
Yeah.
And I've sat with, like, while I was getting divorced, like, we went to couples therapy, and like, one of the things that my ex-wife wanted, she was like, you need to go to a one-on-one session. And I was like, you need to shut the fuck up. Obviously, that didn't work out, right?
But like, I said that to my boyfriend too, and he was like, yeah, he's like, you do you, and I will do what I do, which, yeah. You know.
So I'm sitting with my therapist that I've had, and like, we're sitting there working through some stuff, and he's like, Josh, have you ever thought about like EMDR or anything like that? Maybe you can discover what it was.
I've
that
done
happened.
EMDR. I don't know. Sometimes it's better not to remember.
That's where I'm at. I'm like, dude, like, if my
I did
brain.
Remember. I did a whole like series of it, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, there's more to do, right? There's always more to do.
There's always more to do.
And I was like, I'm good. You know, I'll do therapy. I'll do all that. But like, the memory I did remember, like, it took me like 3 years of therapy to get okay from it. And so I was like, I'm good. Like, I don't need more of that. I don't need any of that.
And if we look at it,
as my mom says, it's better.
Well, it's more than that, right? Like, if my brain blocked that off so that I couldn't remember, so that I could heal.
Survive, right.
Right? It made it so I didn't remember that, so I could move forward, survive. I could heal from what I do remember mm-hmm. and then possibly get to a point where I can live and be happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It's what we do.
And, you know, it's crazy because, like, I didn't get sober when I came home from prison. I came home in 2013. Okay. I didn't get sober.
How old were you?
I was 19 when I went in, 29 when I came home.
And that was 2013.
Yep. I got sober at 32.
Oh, we're the same exact age. You were born in 1982.
84.
Oh, I'm 82.
Yeah. You look a lot better than I do. I'm just going to say.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't go to prison.
You know, there is that. It does one of two things.
I'm just
going
to laugh about you. Like, you know, I'm the type of person that like bothers my friends, you know, like I'm going to make jokes.
That's okay. I make a lot of like really weird jokes.
People are
like, that's just Josh, man. You're either going to love him or you're going to hate him.
Like, same. I'm okay with that too. I've really become very okay with it. Like also, I'm good. I work a lot like you do. Maybe not as much. I'm trying not to work as much as you do, but I do a lot. And like, I don't really have time for all the shenanigans anyway.
So let's look at that, right? Like we're talking about, you know, we work a lot, right? Like I work 80, 90 hours a week.
That's too much. FYI. That's,
I got a $100,000 truck sitting in the parking lot. I got a $100,000 motorcycle sitting in my $500,000 home out in Loxahatchee.
Okay. Well, maybe I should work 80 hours.
You don't have to, right? And it's not like look at me and all the money I make because I work so much. Like,
it's what you want. You want those things.
And my dad was real great, right? He came over, he worked really, really hard to provide for 8 children to the best of his ability. And sometimes he could do it and sometimes he couldn't.
Yeah.
But the one thing that he taught us, like, if you want nice things and you work hard,
You'll get them. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
I get it.
One of two trucks, right? Badass motorcycle, badass home. I came home from prison in 2013 and people were like, you're never going to be nothing. You're never going to have nothing.
Isn't it nice to be like,
I'll show you.
I don't know if I can do this. I'm just like, I get it. That's a good feeling.
The feeling of accomplishment.
Yes,
right?
It is.
But is it the ego stroke that eventually leads to me being so concerned and so wrapped up with myself that eventually I act out and hurt other people because of it?
So tell me now, let's go through kind of you again. You're in Atlanta. Where do you go from mm-hmm. here?
So I got back on the bus, drunk, mm-hmm. right? I get to Miami, kind of sober. They didn't breathalyze me.
Oh.
I sat at the halfway house for 6 months, met a really good friend, dude's my brother today, right? Like we're in the halfway house, we're tripping acid, like we're, you know, doing things we're
so
not supposed to
be doing. So they don't drug test you when you're at-
They do.
It's not like is it a typical like sober house, like
no,
halfway house?
No, it's a re-entry center. It's
okay,
full of,
so-
they don't
Because I know, I say
meetings.
People, in my terminology, halfway house is like sober living.
Right, so- and,
which I guess they shouldn't really, I don't know, anyway.
And it's not that the federal government doesn't believe in recovery, right?
There's H&I commitments, right?
Correct. But when is the last time? Like, I do prisons like every other week.
That's right? Awesome.
And I take a meeting into the state-run facilities, but the federal government.
I'd love to do that for the women's side of it.
So there's only like 3 or 4 women's prisons in the state of Florida.
I've heard.
So let's go a step further, right? Like, the state is taking these steps to like offer something to a guy like me who's going to come home, who's going to get caught in this cycle of, okay, I'm home. It's harder for me to get a job because I'm a convicted felon. I can't vote because I'm a convicted felon. There's all these things
that
are
stacked. Well, you can now in Florida, right?
So next year, I'm actually able to apply to have my rights restored because the same rules that go for people that have a state conviction do not apply for people that have a federal conviction.
I got it. Okay, so again, we arrive. You're in halfway house. You're tripping acid.
I'm doing everything.
Are you working?
I am. Dude out of Miami, RNG Miami Customs. I don't even know if Gus still has the shop or not. Like, he was the only person that would like
give you a job.
He took
the
shop.
There is a website for felons who want to get jobs. I know because I'm in recovery, and there are a lot of people who you know have committed felonies.
And it's more than that, right? Like what I have found is like the people that are actually willing to hire, like they're only willing to hire into a certain demographic because of the tax breaks that actually come along with it.
You get tax breaks?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Right? It's a whole different world.
It's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a whole thing, right?
It's in every
aspect.
It's all
of
a game.
Yeah.
You mean, mm-hmm. how can I make the most amount of money off of this different thing?
Yeah.
So the guy that gives me a shot, he's like, you know, what do you know how to do? I'm like, I can wet sand, I can buff, I can paint, you know, I can do a little bit of body work. And he's like, well, all I need right now is a detailer, $400 a week.
I got to show you my car after.
If I showed you some of the things that I've painted over the past like 10 years, you'd be like, oh my God, why do you not have your own business? And we'll get to that point too, right?
Yeah. So you got a job, Gus.
Yep.
And sounds Greek.
No, he was Colombian.
Oh, okay.
Right. But like, he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And like, he's not the only one. Mm. And like, I'm in South Miami. I'm busting my ass. There's no canopy. I'm real dark at this point. Like, people are like, yo, you're like, you're definitely Mexican, bro. And like, you landscaping? I'm like, bro, don't go that far with it. You know what I mean? But like, so I'm working my way up and I'm wet sanding and I'm buffing. I'm doing all these things. It's hard for me to save money. I've still got to ride the bus. I've still got to go do all these things. And like, eventually like, it comes up for me to get out of the halfway house. So what do? I become a homosexual, right? I get into a relationship with a woman that's obviously not healthy. She's got her own issues. I still have issues. I move in with her when I get out of the halfway.
You become a what, did you say?
Homosexual.
Hobo?
Homosexual.
I've never heard this before.
Never?
Oh. Is it a new one?
I don't know about
that.
Or is
it an old one? I don't know.
So it's just a term, right? Like, I'm going to get into a relationship with someone that I don't really want to be with so I can have a place to stay.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really want to be in a relationship with her.
No, I've never done that.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. I've done it several times. It's not that fun.
I've, yeah, anyway.
We could talk about that. Oh, those are different memories.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's how I made my way to West Palm, right? And still my best friend to this day, TJ, like, he kind of did the same thing. He got into a relationship, manipulated this woman, just like I did. I got into a relationship. I manipulated the woman so I could have a place to stay to kind of give myself a leg up, right? It's me and my sick thinking. Let me continue to hurt people by my actions, not realizing that I'm hurting other people, not myself. Right. And I get a job. So I move from Miami to West Palm. I get a job wet sanding, buffing, detailing cars. Eventually, you know, a guy quits and they're like, hey, do you want to do his job? And I'm like, yeah, I know how to do that job. So I get, you know, a couple of dollars more an hour. And, you know, I'm bilingual. I live in South Florida. Eventually, the guy that's running the office, he's like, oh, man, these fucking Mexicans, pop, 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 pop. Why don't they just speak English? And I'm like, yo, si habla español.
Yeah.
Right? And then he's
I speak Spanish as well.
Right? So, like, and, like, especially here in South Florida, the Latin community is so large. Like, if you can speak multiple languages, like, you're going to make more money.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, he's like, hey.
Not as much in Delray and Boca.
Well.
I never get to practice my Spanish around these areas.
A lot of it has to, it determines, like, where are you at and what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah,
I work in a service industry where, like, we work on cars. So, like,
I'm no longer a chef, so I don't work in the service industry. Thank God.
And there's different aspects of the service industry. Yeah. I've never worked in food service.
Yeah.
I've always worked on cars.
Well, that's what your talent is.
My talent is saute. Me personally, I'm like, this is my curse, right? My curse is that I work on cars because I like the AC and I speak two languages. They're like, hey, do you want to learn to write estimates? Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I've learned to paint cars. I've learned to, you know, today, I'm an iCar Platinum certified technician. Mm-hmm. I can put a car on a frame machine, rip it in two, weld it all back together, make sure everything works, paint it, send it down the road.
That's so cool.
24 years total in this industry. While in prison, I taught guys to work on cars because they actually had a program for that. So it's not like there's nothing there. If you apply yourself, maybe you'll make it.
Right.
What does society do when we come home and you're stigmatized?
That's difficult, right?
That's the thing that's hard to get over, right? Like the federal government being like, hey, okay, go get a job. They're counting on someone saying, hey, they're going to get this tax break. Let me take that tax break. Let me give this guy a job. Let him prove himself to move up. Maybe he'll make it.
Right.
That's as far as their thinking goes. The actual, like, let us provide more to be able to help you with all these tax dollars that we're collecting isn't there. Mm. So
now tell me, you're in West Palm. At this point, are you
lost in the bottom of a bottle of whiskey?
Okay.
Right? Because Josh plus hard drugs equals
prison. You're what, 35?
Not even.
33, 32?
I'm like 30. Not even, this is like still like my first year coming home. Like I haven't even hit 30 yet. I finally hit 30. I'll never forget. We're sitting over at the Golden Corral in Boynton.
Yeah.
Me and the girl that I manipulated so I could have a place to stay. Mm-hmm. She's messed up off of God knows what. Face plants into a fucking plate of something.
I've done that.
Right? And the waiter's like, sir, y'all gotta leave. So like I try and get her up. She starts fighting with me. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting in the Golden Corral parking lot in handcuffs.
Oh no.
Because of my record.
Right. So does that mean you're breaking up with her?
Oh, hell no. Why would I give my place to stay?
Yeah, okay.
I'm sick at this point, right? Like,
I am absolutely sick. So, of course, I mean, this is what people do and, mm-hmm. and you know, what we do. We hurt people when...
And it's more than that. I don't just hurt people. I destroy them.
Yeah.
So, from there, like, eventually we break up. I get a real shitty apartment in the hood because nobody wants to rent to me because I'm a convicted felon once again.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm living above a wash house on 15th and Spruce. I got roaches everywhere. They never go away no matter what I do, right? And my drinking just continues to get worse because there's something
about... And all your money is going to alcohol.
Not all of it. Like, my bills were paid.
Right.
Like, real functional alcoholic, right? But...
Right, me too. But in the end of the day, like, the money I've been able to make in sobriety, even in my, you know, even in my first job... I only was making like $250 a week and my, you know, half that went to my sober living, you know?
And still, right? Like, so I'm making better money, but like I'm drinking continuously. And
right.
For some reason.
That's what
like,
I mean. It's all going to the
I start drinking and then I start smoking crack. And I don't even like crack. I like meth. I want to go fast for like multiple weeks at a time. Right.
Me too.
But now I'm over here in like the worst part of West Palm and I wake up in the morning or I come to in the morning and my knuckles are swollen and I'm covered in blood and it's not mine. And then I go in for a UA and I take a UA and I'm failing because they're like, dude, when did you have time to smoke crack, pop molly, and evidently you're shooting heroin again?
Because it's dirty stuff.
Mm-hmm. Not just dirty stuff. Like, I've never that I can remember stuck a needle in my arm. Mm-hmm. But man, I've woken up with some interesting track marks.
That's so scary.
It's not scary. Like, it's the reality of the situation.
It is the reality of the situation.
You know, so when half I look
of this,
at this.
Half, so many people in this country are, like, dying of sticking needles in their arm.
And it's more than that today, right? Like, because it's this, the spiritual aspect of it, right? I am so just unhappy with myself that the only thing I can think to do to just change the way that I feel internally is to change the way that I perceive the world, and I do that with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
I've got 27 technical UAs. I've got a destroyed relationship. I had this girl was my high school sweetheart. She had moved down here when she was young. I had gone to prison. I moved back. We find each other on Facebook. It's a love story. Oh my God. And I destroyed that woman.
Yeah.
She lost her marriage. She lost her kids. She lost the life that she had because of me. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Because she thought I was somebody that was worth being with, not realizing that in the time that she hadn't known me, I'd become a full-blown junkie.
Right.
Right? So by the time I finally get to that point where I'm working for this dude in Lake Worth and I'm learning to do all these really cool custom paint jobs and custom effects, and it's the joke we make. I was down at his house the other day. He's got 9 motorcycles in the garage. We're down there working on bikes. And we're just laughing. He was like, man, I used to remember you coming to work. And I'm like, dude, I remember you taking one look at me one morning and being like, coffee's just not going to cut it today.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember getting to that point where like, I just couldn't imagine living the way I was living anymore and waking up every morning just wanting to die because that's where I was at. But knowing that like I've tried to kill myself several times. I've tried to hang myself. I've tucked a shotgun in my mouth and I was going to Kurt Cobain it. Right. Primer didn't go off.
That's God.
You call it God. I just call it like poor workmanship. Right?
Yeah.
So like, let's look at that. Like, I get to this point where I can't imagine living life anymore the way it is, but I'm too much of a coward to kill myself where it just doesn't work. Where do I have left to go? 27 technical violations. I'd done every outpatient program that the federal government was going to put me through. And I finally picked up the phone. I called my probation officer. I'm like, John, I need some help. And I'll never forget. He was like,
how old were you?
I was 32. Mm-hmm. So I call him and he's like, hey, come down here and see me. 9:00 Tuesday morning, right? It's like Wednesday the week before. I leave work. I'm like, I'm going to have one beer. One. And I come to and it's Tuesday morning again.
Mm, I know that.
Mm-hmm. So I boogie on down there on the motorcycle. I've got no insurance. I'm behind on payments. I've got no license because I've got a couple DUIs. And I get in there and he's like blowing this and I'm like, I'll never forget the look on his face. He just kind of did one of these, right? I can imagine. I probably hadn't brushed my teeth in a week.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I keep real short hair, so I can just throw some gel in it. Still do that to this day because it's just easier.
Yeah.
Like my beard was like this at the time.
Right.
Probably still looked really unkempt.
Yeah.
And 0.45 at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday. Yeah. And I remember him being like, dude, are you okay? And I was like, this is normal. And he said, Josh, I promise you, this is not normal. And I was like, well, it's normal for me.
Yeah.
And he was like, we're going to get you some help. We're going to send you to rehab. And I was like, dude, I don't think I need rehab, bro. Like, it's not that bad. He's like, dude, you got 27 technical violations. You've been on ankle monitor twice with the federal government.
You need rehab.
He was like, all right, I'm going to make it even simpler for you because that 0.45 is an automatic violation. Your dumbass is going back to prison. I was like, wait, whoa, whoa. I'm an alcoholic. I need help.
Yeah.
Real quick, right? And he was like, all right, cool. Now we can have a conversation about getting you the help that you need.
Right.
So they sent me to DAF down in Delray.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Right? Are you an alumni too?
No.
Oh, just me.
But like, I mean, I went to like really, really prissy, like Karen Renaissance.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. I was scholarshiped. Does that count?
Yeah. You know, a really good friend of
meaning
mine.
Meaning I know really rich people who could help me.
And you know what's crazy, right? Is it's just like my homeboy said the other night at dinner, right? Like same, different.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Right?
And so I go to treatment. The only thing I get from treatment is like it separates me from alcohol and other substances when I don't have the power to do it by myself. Like, right. Like, obviously, I'm powerless. It's the reason like I start. I can't stop. I get stopped in the form of handcuffs. And I'm only stopped until I make it to general population. And then some dude is getting some sort of psychedelic medication that I can take to get myself outside of myself. Mm-hmm. Or I'm the dude that's like, all right, everybody, let me get them sugar packets. We're putting up a 5-gallon batch of hooch. And when it drops, we're all going to the hole. They can't lock us all down.
Yeah.
Right? So like now we have that first part of the first step. We're like, obviously I'm powerless. Obviously I'm fucked. I go to 90 days treatment. The only thing I do get is go to a meeting, get a sponsor, work some steps, work with others. It's the only thing. So I go to this meeting. Some old fat bald guy from AA corners me outside of the meeting. I'm like, get away from me, you pervert. He's like, my name's Jerry. I'm just trying to help you. I'm like, leave me alone. Right? He's got the scar he's showing me. Three women kicked his ass in Key West. That was his bottom. I'm like, dude, like you and me got nothing in common. I'm not fat. I'm not bald. I'm not ugly. Right? That's debatable.
You have everything in common. I'm just kidding.
We literally had everything
physical.
Right. But like we get there and I'm like, you know, we're sitting there talking. And you know, he's like, do you have any questions for me? Like he's just trying to help another drunk. And I'm like, how long have you been sober? Right, that's the only thing that mattered to me at that time. That's the only thing I cared about. I didn't want to go back to prison. They told me, get sober, prison. I didn't want to live.
Right.
And he was like, 27 years. 27 years. I was impressed.
Yeah.
Right? And what are you bothering? And he's like, all right, we're going to read this book. And I'm like, all right. He's like, start reading. I'm like, And he's like, the? I'm like, yeah, bro, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Right? But like this dude...
was like, patient enough to do it with you.
It was more than that, right? Like, I didn't know about the house, the job, the car, the truck, the boat, the beautiful wife, the amazing relationship with his family. I didn't know any of that. I just knew he was some dude that was old, fat, bald, and ugly, cornering me outside of a meeting, let's be honest about it, like making the approach.
Yeah.
And if I was willing to just read a book with him, maybe my life would change. 7.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I'll do one better because I got sober and the federal government locked me up anyway.
Okay, so tell me.
Oh, yeah, right? Like, oh, so, like it's good, right?
So 7.5 years.
So I get sober
with Jerry.
No, I got sober. Well, I got separated from alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
Federal government sends me back to the reentry center. The reentry center tells me you don't need to go to an AA meeting. You need to go get a job. I'm like, guys, I have a job. They won't allow me to go back to the job that I had because it was on commission. And they wanted me to take an hourly job. I'm like, guys, I make $3,000 a week painting cars. And you're going to tell me I can't go to work.
This is your rehab? This is DAF?
No, this is the federal government, the reentry center that they sent me back to.
So they're saying you can't take the job you had in prison.
The job that I had prior to going to rehab. Because I come home from prison. I'm home 4 years. In 4 years, I managed to destroy a relationship, my life, catch 27 technical violations. The federal government finally sends me to a 90-day treatment program.
DAF.
I get out of DAF. They send me back to a reentry
center. Why? What did you do? I mean, like, did you commit something or did they just do it? Why?
Because they can. Because, and I understand the reasoning today. I understand the logic, right? Like, listen, if we put you into a controlled environment, you have a better shot at being successful.
So the reason why you went back was because you violated your parole. Is that why?
So there's no parole in the federal system. Okay. So it's supervised release is what they call it.
Okay.
So I violate the probation. They send me to rehab. I come out of rehab, but because they want me in a controlled environment to give me the best shot at actually staying sober that I can.
You go back to prison?
I go back to the reentry center. The halfway house, right?
Okay.
Where they're not concerned about going to a meeting, working with a sponsor, and figuring out how to have a good life. They're like, go to work, get a job, save some money, give my 60%. And me I'm being baffled. But that's what it is, right? So, okay, you went to treatment because we don't think you're gonna make it.
I get it, but I'm baffled at that.
It's what happens when you don't have something geared toward making sure that people have a chance at recovery, right? Because that's not their mindset. Their mindset is go to work, get a job, reenter into society. Not, hey, you've been out here in society trying to build a life. You messed up. Maybe you need to like go to an actual sober house because you have a problem with alcohol and other substances.
So you got through that as well.
I left. Oh. And then the federal government was like, that's number 28. Turn yourself in. Told me to turn myself in. And here's the thing, right? Like, I just wanted to have this shot at not feeling the way that I felt anymore. And the federal government didn't care. They were
so
like,
so you were supposed to go in for 2 weeks, and then how long did you go?
5 years is what they were going to send me back for.
But how long did you go in for?
9 months.
Okay.
During that first 2 weeks, we had a hurricane come through.
Okay.
Push my sentencing date out to no date.
So you never went?
No, I did 9 months later, but they pushed it out. They were like, continued it to, and they just left the date open.
So, okay, so you went in 9 months later, 4 or 5 years?
No. So I go to rehab, 90 days.
Yeah.
I go to the federal halfway house for 2 weeks. And this is where, like, things start to change. This is really where it started to change. So I went to a meeting, and that's where I met Jerry during that 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We started working some steps, got to the third step, right? I say this prayer. I'm like, all right, God, relieve me of the bondage of self, blah, blah, blah.
I love that prayer. I say it every day. And every single day.
It's a beautiful prayer if we break it down and look at what it says.
I know.
I love it.
It's the best. That's why. People are like, can I change the words? I'm like, you can if you want.
The book says we normally say something like this. Use whatever words you want.
Yeah, you could do whatever you want. But I like that. I don't need to invent anything new. You know, people are like, oh, make your own program. I'm like, I'm good. I'm just going to attend.
You know what happens?
The one that they did already. Like, I don't need to make anything new.
and here's the thing. I'm going to make my own program. The next thing I know, I'm working Josh's Anonymous, not Alcoholics Anonymous.
Exactly.
And the next thing I know, I'm out here doing some real unspiritual things for the next one.
Yeah. So, get me understanding.
All right. So I'm sitting in jail, right? And I remember 3 days prior to that day, they told me to turn myself in. I walked into an AA meeting. I stuck my hand in the air. I hadn't shared yet. I was still like, I'm going to one day smoke crack like a gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anybody that does, right? Pinky up. Mm-hmm. And I finally rose my hand. I was like, you know, Josh, alcoholic. Like, I just want to run. I just don't want to feel the way that I feel right now. The only thing that I know how to do is to run.
Yeah.
And if you look at my track record, I've been arrested 52 times, 3 times by the federal government. Yeah. And I'm not that dude that's like, all right, you caught me. I'm that dude that's like, too much rabbit in my blood. I'm gone. Catch me when you can.
Yeah.
You know, my mom, my dad, my grandma, they've all got the busted door frames from the SWAT team looking for me.
Right.
And I'll never forget. I was like, I just want to go to Mexico, sit on the beach and eat some oranges with my people. Right. The room's laughing. Right. Like, you know, like, and I'll never forget this girl at the end of the meeting. She's like, you have to talk to my fiance.
Jerry?
My homeboy, Robbie. Okay. And she gives me his number and I call him and I leave him a voicemail. I'm like, hey, some girl at the meeting told me to call you, blah, blah, blah. And I'll never forget what he told me that night. Right. Because he calls me back and he's like, you know, He also got sober and then went to federal prison. This is a phone call that happens like 4 hours after the meeting. He was like, dude, I'll make you a deal, bro. This dude I've never met before, just like the guy that corners me outside of a meeting, right? He's like, do the deal. You got a sponsor? I was like, yeah. Who doesn't have a sponsor? He was like, you'd be surprised. I'm like, all right. Work your steps. Be honest and be thorough. When your life changes,
yeah,
help someone else the way someone helped you.
Right.
Your life will change. I can promise you that. I'll go a step further. If it does not work for you the way that it worked for me, I will forfeit my sobriety.
What does that mean?
It means that I will go out with you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'll foot the bill. I'll pay for whatever alcohol, whatever drugs you want, and we'll get as fucked up as you want to. You'll never want for money. You'll never want for a roof over your head, clothes on your back, or a vehicle to drive if you do this deal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you mean to tell me you're going to take money out of your pocket and put it in mine? Food off your table so I can eat. And you're going to give me the keys to your brand new Denali. He was like, yeah, if that's what it takes. If you do this deal and you work with other men, if you need transportation, call me. If it's my motorcycle, my car, my truck, if you need a place to sleep, I got a couch, I got extra bedrooms. Can't make your truck payment? Call me. I'll make it for you. And I was like, dude, you're fucking crazy. He was like, I'm confident. So I go in, they push my sentencing date off. The only person answering my phone calls is Jerry. And he keeps sending me back to the big book. I call crying like a little girl. Where's your big book? I'm like, dude, these calls are expensive. What do you mean, where's my big book? He's like, I know they're expensive. I'm paying for the call. Go get your big book.
Yeah.
And we read the big book.
From jail. From jail.
15 minutes at a time to get me through my steps.
And you were there for how long?
9 months.
9 months, right. Okay. And then you're in jail, not prison.
In jail, waiting to go back to prison. My sentencing date finally comes up. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm fitting to go hit the yard. I'm going to do some push-ups.
But they love AA.
It's really crazy, right? Because, like, they finally call me. They're like, Rangel, you got court tomorrow morning. You're going for sentencing. I'm like, cool. I'm going to go up the road. I'm going to do some push-ups. I'm going to get big again. I'm going to get a new boyfriend. I'm going to do some tattoos, right? You can laugh about that part, right?
Well, I'm going to either way, so...
And I get there and they tell me 8:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm telling the U.S. Marshal, I'm like, yo, what the, you know, what's going on?
Where are you?
I'm like, I'm supposed to be in there. I missed lunch. I've got a boo-boo. He's like, there's a toilet. I'm like, I'm not going there. Right. Like, bowels are shy.
Yeah.
And the guy I was working for and Jerry were at my sentencing. I'd never had anyone show up for my sentencing ever in my life. And they talked to the judge, the United States prosecuting attorney, and the probation department. My probation was reinstated. The time I was sitting in the county jail counted towards my probation, and I got to come home that day.
Yay.
And they gave me 90 days of ankle monitor, right? Again, with the ankle monitor.
Oh, God, this ankle monitor.
I did not successfully complete ankle monitor, and the only reason I did not successfully complete ankle monitor is I did not have enough time left on probation to do it. And I successfully completed my United States federal probation.
Amazing.
So I come out.
And you finish the steps.
I finish my steps and I start working with other guys. And like, what happens, right? Because like, they're like, oh, you need to believe in God. I'm like, God's not real. We can have the theological debate if you want to. But what happens, right? Do I take the chance and have some hope that maybe, just maybe, if I do something different, my life will change? If I surround myself with people on a similar journey, that maybe they'll hold me accountable, want better for me, and I'll want better for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy. I was sitting down last night with another guy, and we're sitting in the truck, right? And I go through these steps and like I get to the third step and I'm like, all right, God, take all these things that are the bondage of Josh. Take all the things that Josh wants, the things that I think are good for me, the house, the money, the truck, the car, the girlfriend. If it's going to come between me and my ability to stay sober, take it.
Yeah.
Whether I understand it or not. Because I've had vehicles repoed. I've had houses lost. I've been divorced. I had a business go bankrupt, all in sobriety.
Money comes and goes.
It's, you know,
people don't get that. It's happened in my life. I mean, I can tell you my story one day. But money comes and goes, you know? And, we'll go and the most important further, thing is like staying sober, because honestly, I'll never get it back if you don't.
And I go through these steps and I make these lists and I say these prayers to a God I don't believe in, and things start to change in my life, right? Like, I go through and I think the biggest thing, like, I love shopping at Publix today, right? I hate shopping at Walmart, but I've stolen so much stuff from Walmart over the course of my life that my sponsor is like, you got to shop at Walmart. And I'm like, fuck you, bro. So I go there for like big things of paper towels. So I don't have to go there that often, like big things of toilet paper, right? And, but like, I go to Publix and I'll never forget, like I smoke meat. It's my hobby.
You smoke meat.
Yeah, okay. Like briskets, pork shoulders, pork belly. My ex-wife was like, you know, you're going to do one of two things, right? And become a World War II history buff, or you're going to get into smoking meats. It's like, what's what happens to men at like 35, 40, right?
I dated the World War history buff.
So she bought me a smoker because she was like, rather than watching history documentaries, please, I'd rather eat good food. Right? Yeah,
totally.
So, and I go to Publix one day and they don't have the mustard I'm looking for. It's like whole grain mustard, a specific brand that I like. And like, I asked like one of the kids that works there, I'm like, hey, can you help me find this? And next thing I know, I got three kids that bag groceries, two cashiers and two managers in the condiment aisle helping me look for this mustard that they don't carry.
I'm gonna show you the mustard that I use, and you might switch. It's really good.
And sure
enough, they have it at Publix.
Right? But like, let's look at that, right? If I am this person that you come up to and I don't know where anything's at, I don't know how to help you, I don't have a good attitude, and I'm not interested in helping you, it's like shopping at Walmart, right? I go in there, no one knows anything, it's not their department, and they don't care.
Yeah.
Or I can be like Publix. I can be the, you know, hey, let me help you. This is what we have. How can we help you?
Yeah, they're so friendly.
I shop at Publix today because it's that Publix specifically I go to buy that mustard, because every time I go in there, there's a whole row of it. And I don't know if they do it just for me. I like to think that they do, but like, that like they just stock it now, but like they stock it because at one point I asked for it.
Right.
So it's now there.
What's it called?
I think it's Mally's or something.
M-A-I-L-L-E.
Yes.
I have it in my fridge.
The whole grain one?
That's the one.
That's the one I use. It's French. Right?
It's pronounced my.
Mally.
I went to, you know, chef school in France. So, you know.
Oh, fancy.
I know. I was fancy.
But how do I become this person that is acceptable, that is lovable, that is kind, that is patient, that is tolerant, that has honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, loyalty, brotherly love, knows what it means to have a life of service?
Yeah.
You know, I've had the privilege of like working with a lot of guys over the past almost 8 years.
Well, I mean, I know that you're the sponsor of a friend of mine who was also on the show. And, you know, there are people who have tried multiple times to help this person. You know, I've been in this guy's life for almost 8 years. And like the way he is today and his attitude and everything is like, he definitely is talking to someone like you. You know what I mean? Like, he definitely met someone who did it harder. It's hard when you've done some things, like at least in my experience, like I've sponsored girls and they're like, well, you never did this. You don't understand because you didn't do that. You don't understand. There are people that won't want my help because of that. And that's okay. As long as they find someone and whatever, right, that's okay. I'm like, all right, well, listen, I'm here for you. You want it, but that's very powerful. Like, you spoke to Robbie.
And Robbie had a lot of similar circumstances, right?
Exactly. And that's why you were like, well, if you can, even though he wasn't your sponsor, it's like, wow, if Robbie can do it, maybe I can too.
So I get to this point in life, right? Like, not only can he do it, he's done it. And I can see all this material bullshit that he has.
Right.
And then you tell me you're going to give me the material bullshit that's yours if I just do this, if I don't just miraculously appear with it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, $100,000 truck sitting in the parking lot.
No, I know. I saw it.
$12,000 on wheels and tires because I wanted to. That was my 40th birthday present to myself, right? It was like either that or a 20-year-old girlfriend. I was like, I think the truck's going to be less expensive.
Yeah, I promise you. I promise you.
I'm like, I'm going to get the truck, right?
The 20-year-old girlfriend is going to cost you that like weekly.
And I'm not.
Especially
yeah.
here in Florida.
And the truck's
I've never
not,
met girls yeah. like this in my life. I'm from New York. We don't do that kind of stuff. Like, I didn't. My friends didn't.
Oh, I'll do one better because the truck's not going to get mad if I drive another truck.
I like that.
Right?
That's good.
But like, and yeah, I've got a lot of material bullshit today. Do you know what I have that's worth more than all that material bullshit? The trucks, the motorcycles, the house? My daughter, who wanted nothing to do with me, she totaled her first car. I'll never forget it, right? And she calls me up. I'm getting ready to go see the fights with the homeboy. She's like, Dad. And I'm like, oh, shit. Hey, go grab the cuete. We're finna take a road trip. My homeboy's like, all right, done. Say less. I got you. And I'm like, baby, what's wrong? And she says, Daddy, I totaled my car. I'm like, do you have all your fingers and toes? She's like, I have all my fingers. I'm like, where are your toes? She's like, I can't see them. I'm like, you can't see your toes? Is it because, like, the car's messed up or you're wearing shoes? She's like, I'm wearing shoes. I'm like, oh, thank God.
I thought you were going to say she was pregnant or something. You know, she can't see
her
toes.
Oh, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right? I tell her, I say, you know, how long before the cops and the ambulance get there? She says, I don't know, Daddy. You're the first phone call I made. Right?
That's awesome.
To go from you're a piece of shit, I never want to talk to you again. Now, anytime anything happens in life, like, I'm the first phone call you make.
That's amazing.
Right? A couple months go by. Like, me and the homeboys are going to see some fights again. Right? We're going to Twin Peaks. Right? I like the wings there. Right? I don't even eat chicken. We go there for the entertainment. And she calls me up. She's like, Dad, guess what? I'm like, you're pregnant. Right? Goofing off. Right? Dead silent. How did you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, more gray comes into the beard instantly, right?
Immediately starts to grow.
You know, she's like, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, I think I'm having a heart attack. And like, she hangs up on me. She calls my brother TJ. And she's like, is my dad okay? Are you there with him? And he's like, yeah, he's fine. He just looks like he's having a heart attack. She's like, call the ambulance. He's like, nah, he doesn't have insurance. He'll be all right. But like, think about that, right? To go from you're a piece of shit, I never want to talk to you again, to now anytime anything happens, I'm the first phone call you
make. That's amazing.
A woman that I had no relationship with because I wasn't paying child support. I come into this program. I get a job. I show up for work every day. I get a promotion. I get a raise. I pay my child support. I pay off $250,000 in back child support. Now all of a sudden we're co-parenting. Now all of a sudden anytime anything happens in her life, hey, what do you think about this? And like something goes on, she calls me. I'm like, dude, I'm not a fucking therapist. She's like, dude, you got more life experience than anyone I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it didn't come easy. She's like, believe me, I get it, buddy. But now tell me what to do. And I'm like, I can't tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Let me ask you some questions to get to that point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll do one better. My 5 years sober almost, my stepdad died, my dad died, my business went bankrupt, and I lost my marriage.
I'm so sorry.
Man, dad had a good run. Marriage wasn't meant to be. That business wasn't meant for me.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get to that.
That's why
too,
I won't
right?
get married. You know? I'm not sorry about that.
And it's not that, right? Like, I robbed my stepdad and my mom blind like 7 times. I stole my dad's life savings in active addiction. I get sober. And I start to change the person that I am. And they're like, oh, we don't care about the money. Just keep doing what you're doing, right?
I know. I've heard that before too.
But it's more than that, right? Because like, they watch my life on social media. I call consistently. I show up. I take my fiance at the time home so she can meet my family prior to us getting married. I get the chance to go to have breakfast with my stepdad. This guy that I robbed, cleaned out, fought with in his front yard. After this guy made a decision to marry a woman who had a bunch of kids and loved those kids as his own, and I treated him so poorly.
Right.
Right? I get sober, I go to make these amends, I go to change my behavior, not mumble, I'm sorry, to show up as a different person. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning, I still get up early, it's crazy, right?
I wish I was that person.
Oh, no, you don't, because I get to bed at like 1 a.m. and I'm back up at like 5. And I go to breakfast with my dad because that's what he is at this point in my life. Like, he's my dad.
Yeah.
And he's where I got my insane love of motorcycles. I was fortunate enough I got 2 because I have my father and I have my dad. And we go to breakfast and it's his favorite breakfast spot. And we go to breakfast with all these people. And he's like, this is my son, Josh. They're like, oh, the one that owns the body shop in Florida that builds amazing hot rods and motorcycles? My dad's like, yeah. And introduces me to all these people, right? just because I made a few changes in my life that no one saw. No one saw the countless guys that go to 3 o'clock in the morning to take the detox, or the fact that like these phones don't stop ringing, right? And I do these things and I get this life and I'm able to be a son that I should have always been to this guy who didn't have to love me, but did anyway.
Yeah.
And when he goes in for dialysis, I remember talking to him a few days. I shot him before that. And I sent him these pictures of the bike that I'm working on, my bike, right? And he's like, oh man, that's going to be sick. Yeah. How many speakers is that? I'm like, 16, Dad. It's fucking stupid loud.
Yeah.
And he goes in for dialysis and he dies during dialysis. And I start to plan the trip home so I can go to put my dad to rest. And my sister Barbie calls me and she's like, hey, when are you going to be here? I'm like, dude, I've been waiting on you guys to like tell me when the funeral is so I can book the flight. Like, all I need to know is like the information. I'll be there.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, we weren't sure if you were coming. That's what we were waiting on to have the funeral. And I'm like, guys, like, just give me the day. And like, you know, we would be honored if you would be one of Dad's pallbearers. And this is a man that I had no blood connection to, and his children that he's blood related to thought it was, you know, it's more of an honor for me to be able to do it than for them to be able to do it.
But tell me, what do you do today to keep all this? Like forget the, listen, your truck's nice. I saw it. I love it. But who cares about your truck? Let's be real. Like in the end of the day,
what do you do
that keeps you with your family, that keeps your daughter calling you, that keeps your ex-wife happy and asking you for advice and all of that? Like all of that stuff obviously measures way more than the material things.
You know, when I got divorced, I got my truck and I was mad, right? And I have this big book cover and on the back of it's a timing cover off a 1972 Harley Davidson. It says live to ride, ride to live. And when she gave me that cover, she told me if I ever start to lose sight of why I do this program, to remember this program is the only thing that's given me a life worth living.
Right.
Period. I'd be nothing without this program. I've got 4 guys that I work steps with. I've got 4 guys that I work traditions with. And I got 2 guys that I'm about to start concepts with.
I've never done concepts.
Oh my God, sweetheart. It will change the way you view the world.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Think about it. Today, I get to be tired. Today, I get the opportunity to work.
You're right. So this program. But more than this program, you work with people, you volunteer your time.
It's a life of sacrifice, right?
Do you know, you have a connection with a higher power?
I don't believe in God.
Still
don't. It's okay. Not my thing. And if you do believe in God, like I would encourage you.
I love that you say this, actually. I do, personally.
Mm-hmm.
My own God. I'm not religious. However, I love that you say this because there's so many people that I ran with that I'll still talk to like a couple of them. Okay. There's this one girl that I every time in the room they say like think about someone outside of this room, like I think about her every time. I'm not going to mention her name because I don't want to call her out, but I absolutely love her. I want her, but she's like, I'm not doing that program. I don't want to believe in God. And I try to explain it's not about that, but it's hard to do that when, you know, it's hard to do that.
I think
tell me how you do it. What's
my favorite line to tell guys I work with is get in the truck. Point blank, bottom line, get in the truck.
What does that mean?
I can tell you how to be sober. Mm-hmm. I can tell you to work the steps. I can tell you to practice these principles, or I can show you that I practice these principles.
Like walk the walk, talk the talk.
Do as I do, not as I say.
Yeah.
Right.
But when the whole book talks about a spiritual connection and all of that, so you have no spiritual connection, you're telling me?
I call it what you want. The book tells me it doesn't matter what I believe in as long as I'm willing to live by spiritual principles, period. Period.
Okay. I like that.
If I'm willing to live by these.
So what are your spiritual principles?
Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity. Justice, brotherly love, right?
So spirituality.
My faith is
your family, your
no. If faith is the unshakable belief that something is going to happen, right? And we talk about
for me, faith is like I'm trusting the process, right?
And that's literally what it is. The more guys I work with, the more I have to set the example of like actually practicing what I preach.
Right.
I can't be like, dude, don't go smoke crack, and I'm over here with a stem in my hand.
No.
I can't be like, you shouldn't be lying, and I'm lying. I can't be like, don't lie, cheat, and steal, and then I turn around, and what do you see me doing? Lying, cheating, and stealing.
Yeah.
My sponsor told me when we sat down to do this process, if I worked with other men, that I would never have to feel the way that I felt ever again. And that was the truth of it.
Yeah, I don't have as many sponsors as you do, but I have them and I love them and I meet with them. And I even meet with girls who have finished, have finished their stuff. I meet with them, because we've developed a relationship that's really unshakable,
It's more than that. I get to help other people, and by helping other people, my life just gets great. It has nothing to do with all the material bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
love that you say that, because it really doesn't. I mean, listen, it's really nice and I like nice things too, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like, I can do with or without. And people maybe don't believe that, but like, I've washed it. I've done with or without. I've left the apartment with all the things in it, flown to another country to leave those things, because I had to. So, like, I've done it multiple times. I don't want to do it again. I really don't. I feel like I don't want
to
do it again.
People are afraid to start over. This is like my ninth life.
Me too. I call this the bonus round.
It's overtime.
Oh, good for you.
And yeah, I'm in retirement mode. At least I'm. forget the job and the paycheck and all these other things, right? Like, and I don't expect anyone to routinely work with as many guys as I do. I'm blessed.
I know people who do. And good for you, because if you work 80 hours a week and you do that as well, like, God bless you. You really sent, there's a reason why that pistol didn't go off. This is the reason why that pistol. You may not believe in God, but I believe that was God. That was whatever power that be saying, this guy is meant to help all these people.
And it's not me helping other people. It's the people that I've had the ability to work with are the entire reason that I'm sober today.
Yeah. No.
It has nothing to do with me. My life does not belong to me anymore. Everything I have should have a big ass sticker that says Property of Alcoholics Anonymous on it, because that's the truth.
Yeah.
Because without these steps, without that book, without this program, without some dude being like, will you help me? I wouldn't have the life that I have today.
I love that you say that. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
No, really. Thank you. I feel like we need to do a part 2.